the Point Radio.
Hey, it's Mike Rod, back from the convention that pretty much has shown San Diego the East Coast knows how to pack them in. Lots of news to share, plus a visit to the set of Arrow to talk with the cast and creators about this new season of What's on the Way. Plus, comedian Adam Ferrari is back in the driver's seat in a new season of Top Gear, and he talks about that. Let's get to the point.
This is the point. The Point Radio. Get the Point Radio.
Arrow is back for a new season on the CW, and this year the show gets back to a little bit of its mystery elements in an overlying story arc that covers pretty much most of the first part of the season. Executive producer Mark Guggenheim explains.
One of the things that we really wanted to bring into season three that was present in season one but wasn't really a part of season two because of the nature of season two was the element of mystery. Season one had a lot of mystery to it, and like, you know, there was the undertaking, there was the well-dressed man who we revealed was John Barrowman, and we revealed what he was up to, and the conspiracy, and there was a sense of like cloak and dagger that season two, because it was a more straight up revenge story, didn't have. And we, one of the things that we decided at the beginning of season three was to re-inject that element into the show. And certainly John's character, Malcolm Merlyn, allows us to do that because A, he's a mysterious figure, but also his agenda is mysterious. And certainly we ended season two between him and Thea on this note of, ooh, what's going to happen next? And we're actually going to show you the remainder of that scene in the limo and what she said to him and what he said to her after basically they looked at each other and we cut out. So you'll get a chance to see. But it's a big part of the fun of season three is the mystery of where is Malcolm, what's Malcolm up to, you know, what's Malcolm up to specifically vis-a-vis Thea. That's going to be something that will evolve and roll out slowly over the course of at least the first 10 episodes.
Co-EP Greg Berlanti explains you can add a little romance element to that too, between Oliver and Felicity.
In terms of Oliver and Felicity, you know, obviously they've grown in closeness through the years, and she, you know, even though he said what he said under certain circumstances at the end of the year last year, there was a truth to it that we explore early on. And a large part of Oliver's journey this year is dealing with whether or not he can have it all, as it were, you know? Or is he just, has he just commissioned himself to a life of crime fighting and that's it? You know, or what about the life part of it? You know? And the fuller life.
And then there's a baby for Diggle, played by David Ramsey, who says the new arrival certainly changes the dynamic of his character.
It was going to cause some tension because he has some things at stake. I don't think that Diggle is really going to have a problem. I think Oliver is going to really have a problem with the idea this guy's a father and he's risking his life every day for his crusade, which Diggle does take great offense to. But, there'll be some tension.
But don't expect Diggle to be a stay-at-home dad. There are big plans coming up for him.
I think that's the challenge. I think that's where the writers want to take this. They want to make the stakes higher. How does he get more involved with not only Team Arrow, Suicide Squad, and Argus, but also have a family, have a child? Some of the things that Oliver wants to do, you're going to see that happen with Diggle this season. Some of those balances of his personal life and this crusade, Diggle's going to start doing this season. And I think Oliver's going to see some of what Diggle goes through and have to make some choices as well. So, it's interesting because it's both these men have problems forming relationships, I think. And Diggle has kind of gone through some of these things. He's had a crucible. He's had an island in Afghanistan already that he's kind of dealt with. And he's further along with dealing with some of his demons.
David also reminded us that the main character in the show is starting out the year in a pretty good spot.
Well, Oliver's in a good place, right? He's, he got the baddie without killing him. And he's officially become, you know, like a hero that doesn't kill and brings them to justice. Now you got to pull the carpet out from under him, right? And that's the idea of the season. The big bad guy, that's going to test Oliver and the whole team in a way we haven't seen. And in terms of this whole, we're not going to kill and we're going to do it the right way, all that will be challenged this season.
Now, without being too spoilery, don't count out actress Katie Lutch yet. Mark Guggenheim explains.
First of all, we love Katie, and she's amazing, and she really was such a big part of season two. We absolutely had to bring her back for season three, and we made a recurring deal for
three episodes, but we've got ideas and sort of a need, you know, certainly beyond three. So you're just going to see her in a recurring role the same way we have, you know, the way John Barrowman was a recurring in season two. And, you know, it sometimes people are regulars and sometimes they're recurring and we go back and forth. And, you know, when they're recurring, just contractually, we have to sort of work around people's schedules. But we do that dance and we juggle everything around. And as Katie is available, you know, one of the things we want to do for certain has been on our bucket list since last year, as we want to do a flashback story that basically takes Sarah from the shores of Lianyu after the Amazo went down to Nanda Parbat and becoming a member of the League of Assassins.
Everyone's excited about the Arrow sister show, The Flesh, and you certainly can expect some crossovers between the two shows as the season progresses. They'll come at all shapes and sizes, too, as Greg tells us.
I think, like, for me, the joy of it is like the comic books. You just don't know when or how it's going to happen, really, and that there should be different versions of it, like mini versions where it's just like, I'm calling Starling City and someone is on the phone, you know? We did, like, a little one like that at the tail end of last year in Arrow, where we brought in Cisco and Caitlin before, you know, we did the pilot. And they were shooting the pilot, like, the day before, and then they were running over and doing, there's a lot of that, the smaller ones, and then also some, you know, wanting to do some bigger ones, obviously, where there's villains that go across, and, you know, I mean, I think, those are incredibly evocative.
While he won't be Speedy in name, Golden Haynes is now a fully costumed member of the Arrow team.
Yeah, I mean, it's the good thing about the show, in a way, is it's not just about the sidekicks, you know. We've got, you know, Felicity does more than any of us, and than anyone really gives her credit for. So it's nice, you know, and Diggle as well. So it's more of a team than just sidekicks. But Roy brings the street cred to it. He knows the areas. He's also kind of a logical thinker. You know, he can admit his faults and admit when he's wrong. But this season, we're going to see Roy maybe not trusting everyone as much as he normally has, and maybe possibly setting off on his own little private missions to see if he's being told the truth.
And he still is kind of learning how to handle that bow.
I'm good if I can stay still and shoot. But if I have to do, like, other, like, a run and shoot, it's pretty much, I pretty much just owe everything to my stunt double, Curtis Bourcognier, because he, I always say that I'm his dialogue double, because he basically is the reason why I look so cool.
As you can see, it looks like every cast member has a big moment or two coming up in the new season, and nobody's happier about that than series star Stephen Amell.
Well, it's certainly going to be different, and I'm excited for that. I'm so fired up for Willa Holland. She's such a wonderful actor, and she's getting the car keys this year and taking the show for a spin a little bit, and as she should. Emily's getting that opportunity too with an episode, and you know, we saw what a wonderful job Katie Lawson, Katie Cassidy, and David Ramsey did last year when they had their sort of centric episodes. It's always such a joy for me, aside from the fact that I get a couple of days off. I'm so proud of our cast, and you know, I feel like, I mean, most of them are older than me, but I feel like a proud dad, you know, when they get their episodes. So I'm excited for it.
New episodes of Arrow every Wednesday on the CW, and catch up with more right now on Hulu and Hulu Plus. It's official. New York Comic Con has passed the number of attendees of San Diego Comic Con. With all that, there's plenty of news to share from what went down in New York City. Marvel dropped no less than a few big chunks of news on the New York Comic Con audience, including confirming the end of the Fantastic Four, as we told you, with number 645. The original numbering returns with issue 642, which will begin the story arc that'll end the series. Writer James Robinson promises a stellar moment for all the major characters and promises also that it won't leave a bad taste in the mouth of fans. Again, that's to take place about mid-year next year, just before Fox releases their rebooted Fantastic Four film, directed by Joss Trank. Not totally unexpected that there's a new Ant-Man series on the way. Nick Spencer writes it. Ramon Rosanas will draw it. It'll debut for Marvel in January. And another addition to their Star Wars universe as well with the Last Padawan series, which will tie directly into the Star Wars Rebels animated TV show that debuted just a few days ago on Disney's XD network. That'll take place in a new comic that'll be written by Greg Wiseman and will debut sometime early in 2015 as well. Not everything that came out of New York Comic Con as far as news was pretty straightforward. For example, heads are still being a little shaken over the Archie meets Predator crossover, announced by Dark Horse and Archie Comics as well. That'll take place in spring of next year. Dynamite announced a new series with popular author Jim Butcher to debut sometime next year as well. It'll be Butcher's Downtown, and it'll be an original comic book miniseries, more than likely in stores in February from Dynamite. And our favorite story for the weekend takes us right back to Marvel for the release of a new Secret Wars series that'll take place in the Marvel Universe sometime next year. Jonathan Hickman, again, will write this series as well, which will, of course, have huge merchandise tie-ins for the company. And it falls on the 30th anniversary of the original Secret Wars, which took place in 1984. Not much else is known about the project right now, but there is a teaser illustration done by Alex Ross, easy to find anywhere on the internet or, of course, at Marvel.com. Actress Katie Holmes reprises her role as Jackie Kennedy Onassis in the new follow-up to the Kennedy series from Reels. This one will continue to cover the life of the former First Lady. Katie will also direct an episode of the miniseries, which is called After Camelot, and is set for Reels, the cable channel, sometime in 2016. Starz has renewed the original series Black Sails for a third season, even though we're a few months away from the debut of the second one. Meanwhile, CBS has dropped the axe again on their series Unforgettable. As you remember, it was revived as a summer series with some success over the past couple of years. However, there won't be a new run of episodes next summer on CBS. And as a cherry on top of what's already been a pretty big news week, Marvel released an image of Civil War. Seems like it's a new version, but not much is known about it other than in the image there's Iron Man, Captain America, and Spider-Man. All this on the heels of a new Secret Wars should be cool.
The Point, The Point.
Actor-comedian Adam Ferrara is back for a new season of the popular automotive series Top Gear on the History Channel. And I ask Adam, when sandwiching this in between all of his other jobs, is all that because it's a labor of love for him?
Yes, it is. I've always... my father had an incredible mechanical ability and loved cars. And anytime you wanted to spend time with Dad when he wasn't working, he was in the garage. So I have very limited mechanical ability, Mike. My job was to hold the light. Pretty much that's what I had to do. But I got to be with my dad, and he would explain how everything worked. And that's how I got my emotional connection to cars. Specifically, I like 60s and 70s cars. That's kind of my wheelhouse. I just bought, actually bought from the show, I bought the... We did an episode about land barges, which was large cars from the 70s. And to prove how big it was, I put a piano on the top of a 1970 Buick Electra 225 and drove around with a guy playing it. And I actually bought that car. I had to take the piano off, Mike. But I bought the car, and I'm restoring it now. It's at the final stages. I just got to get the exhaust put into it. But it's great. And it's 18 feet 5 inches. 18 feet
wow.
6 inches. I have three garages in California in my house. It doesn't fit in any of them. It's huge. I have to signal for a turn in that car a week in advance.
So as a real gearhead, what would be his ultimate dream car?
Oh, we don't have the time, Mike. Where do you want to start? First, we're going to start with the GTO. I'll start probably with 65 GTO, 68 390 Fastback, the bullet car, the Steve McQueen car. 59 Caddy, a 62 Coupe de Ville. My father had a 57 Starfire Rolls with a Continental kit with the J2 in it. I would buy that. And then, yeah, pretty much the new Lamborghini, like I said, I drove last night, was great. The 458 Italia, the Ferrari, is just an achievement. I mean, that car was so, it's perfection, that car. So, I mean, I would get, I would have a giant, I'd have Jay's garage if I had his budget, we'll put it that way.
As we said, in addition to Top Gear, Adam also acts and, of course, still loves comedy. I ask you how he got started in that. Was he always the funny kid in high school?
Yeah, it was funny on the bus, and it was, I saw Richard Pryor when I was like 12 years old. We went to one of those, you know, those parties you used to go to when your parents mm-hmm. would drink, and you'd get the warning in the car when your mother would look in the back like, now don't behave like animals. Your father does business with these people. So they all went in and watched the Richard Pryor on videotape. It was the Santa Monica concert, and the kids weren't allowed in there. Then they went out and they went to have coffee, and I snuck in and I rewinded the tape, and it just blew my head off, Mike. I remember saying out loud, look what this man can do. He just held an audience in his hand, and I didn't know I wanted to be a comic, but I knew that that moment had such a profound effect on me.
So how did you migrate then into acting?
Well, I was doing stand-up on Long Island, and I always wanted to see if I could do it, you know, to be on television and see if I could act. But I knew I didn't know how to do it, and I was very afraid to learn how to do it because I didn't really know why I was funny. I knew I enjoyed being funny, but I didn't know what made me funny, and I didn't want to screw that up. So it took me a while to actually get up the courage to try and learn something new. And I studied with an acting coach, Stephen Book, who's still my acting coach to this day. And I realized that, okay, I can do both. So I just studied that and was fortunate enough to get a couple of jobs and be permitted to allow to do it again.
So with all this, plus some pretty successful writing for television as well, has he ever thought about directing?
Yeah, I wouldn't. If I had the opportunity to present itself and I feel like I could do a good job, it's something I'd like to try. You know, it's like I'm a renaissance man. I'm actually building a flying machine as I speak to you, Mike, right now. So
Adam Ferrara leads the pack in new episodes of Top Gear every Tuesday on the History Channel. See more episodes right now at historychannel.com. That does it for the podcast. We're back again in a few days once we get unpacked and recover just a little bit. And lots more to share with you on websites like comicmix.com, michaeldavisworld.com, getthepointradio.com. And, of course, you'll always find us in the iTunes podcast directory as well. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under The Point Radio, and we'll see you right back here.
Get The Point Radio.